This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton joins me in studio, local author, award-winning author, historian, cartographer. He's online at rickbritton.com. Can you hear this okay in your headphones?
I can't.
You can't hear a thing?
Yep.
Well, I don't know what's going on.
That's okay.
Let me see if I can fix it.
Can you hear me? There you go.
I can indeed. I can hear you. I can hear you crystal, Rick Britton. Crystal.
Man, it's hot out there.
Is it?
Oh, my God.
Is it super?
Oh, my God.
I mean, the heat index.
Driving down here was unbelievable.
What's the heat index? I don't even know. What is that? It's got to be over 100, right?
It has to be.
Because it's been, since I've been in here in the last about an hour, it's wavered between like 95 and 100 degrees.
I mean, when you feel like the fan in your car, the air coming out of it could kind of bake you sitting in the driver's seat, you know that's hot.
Reminds me of a couple of years I lived in Tampa Bay, Florida. Oh, man, you want to talk about hot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like 100 degrees at 7 o'clock in the morning, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just as hot.
Oh, yeah.
But it starts earlier and it stays hot later.
One time flying to South America, I got off the plane in the middle of the night now. It's midnight or 1 o'clock. In Belém, Brazil, right on the equator, right on the Amazon, close to the equator, in the middle of the night, it's like 105 degrees. You step out of the plane, you are immediately soaking wet. We had to get off the plane, and you're just totally drenched. As soon as you got off the plane, bam, it hits you.
Do they do that siesta thing down there where people go home in the middle of the day and take a nap?
You have to, because when it's really, really hot, you can't work. I mean, it's dangerous to be outside and work.
And that's what, and they go back and then they work later than we do have dinner later.
Yeah, in places like that where it's steamy hot, you know, where it's dangerous, you have to.
Yeah. That sounds like a good schedule as far as I'm concerned.
It could be okay.
Yeah.
You get used to it.
Go home and put your feet up in the afternoon, then be willing to stay a little later, have dinner a little later.
That's right.
Yeah. I like that. And you know what else I like? I like your talks that you give and the classes that you give that are available through the Senior Center.
Thanks.
What's the latest?
We're having a lot of fun. Well, this month we have Colonel Keith Gibson from VMI. He's coming up and he's giving a free talk on Wednesday, August 18th. So that's a week from tomorrow at 6 o'clock. And it's about VMI in the Civil War, the Virginia Military Institute, and its influence on the Civil War. Of course, you know, people called it the West Point of the South. A tremendous number of officers serving the Confederacy were trained at VMI. And then, of course, the VMI cadets fought at the Battle of New Market and were of great assistance to the Confederacy in other means. They went down to Richmond when the war broke out and helped train the volunteers. So there was a lot that happened with VMI. And then a week after that, on Wednesday, August 25th, we're going to go down there and spend an entire day, a Civil War day, in Lexington, Virginia. So we're going to see Robert E. Lee's final resting place at Lee Chapel. We're going to see Stonewall Jackson's final resting place in the cemetery. We're going to see the Jackson House, the only house that that Jackson ever owned during his lifetime with his second wife. And then, of course, we're going to visit Colonel Gibson's VMI Museum, which has a lot of fabulous stuff. So it's going to be a great trip.
Good stuff.
Yeah,
good stuff.
You can
get more information at the Senior Center. It's 974-6538. That's the number for the travel office. Or you can go online, seniorcenterinc.org.
Right.
Good stuff. So
yeah, thanks, man.
We're talking about the most significant Civil War battles that took place in Virginia. And we are on number 9 or number 10?
We are actually on number 11.
Oh, my goodness.
We've made it up to 11.
We're on number 11.
We're almost halfway through.
And we want to remind folks that all of these conversations we've had exploring these significant battles are available as podcasts at WINA.com, or you can go to the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
A great site.
cvillepodcast.com, and listen to all these previous conversations we've had about these battles, exploring these battles in great detail. And today, where are we in the battle? Are we in 1863 in the Civil War?
We're early in 1863, March 9th, 1863, and it's Mosby's, John Singleton Mosby's Fairfax Courthouse Raid. And you know, when we started this, it kind of grew really quickly, but I decided on a set of criteria, and then one that I decided on after we got into it a little ways was there are certain things that we needed to add. You can't really talk about the Civil War in Virginia and not include more naval battles. So I added in Fort Darling, Drury's Bluff, that became number 3. I wanted to add in more naval fights. I also wanted to add in more that was representational of the African-American experience in the Civil War here in Virginia. So we're going to get to a couple of those later on in the list. But also, you can't really talk about the Civil War in Virginia and not talk about the guerrilla war, especially in Northern Virginia. And so that's why I added in number 11, Mosby's Fairfax Courthouse Raid. Now, John Singleton Mosby had been to school here at UVA in the mid-1850s. He was born in another county. You could say that he grew up. His family moved to just south of Charlottesville, so he grew up. He went to what you would call elementary school at Fry Springs, and then they got him into the University of Virginia. He was a small guy. He only weighed, as an adult man, he only weighed 125 pounds, so he's small.
Holy cow!
He's scrappy. Very scrappy, very quiet, but you don't want to get on his bad side, and kind of somebody always on the fringes. So he gets into the University of Virginia, and he got into an argument with a guy who was known as being the school bully at the time, a guy by the name of Turpin. And there were some notes and some words that passed back and forth. A lot of people later on thought that it had been about a young lady. It was not about a young lady. It was about some insults that Ben Turpin had issued via a note to Mosby. Mosby waited for him in a fraternity house, actually a boarding house, I take that back, on Rugby Road, and shot him in the neck. Lucky for Mosby and for Turpin, Turpin was not killed. But nonetheless, Mosby was thrown into the Brown Street jail and then ended up studying the law under the prosecutor, ended up reading the law.
It gives some perspective to the violence you hear about in schools, where kids who are picked on take a gun to school and kill the bully who's been picking on them. This is not a new thing. I mean,
it's not a new thing. Not a new thing at all. He took out a bully. Of course, the bully survived. Luckily for both.
Yeah.
Maybe I should go back and try to figure out what happened to Ben Turpin later on in life. But anyway, Mosby certainly became, you could say, probably the most famous guerrilla leader in this part of the war. Out west, there were some others, and we'll talk about them too in relation to Mosby. But so he hung out his shingle in southwest Virginia, and when the war started, became a lawyer, hung out his shingle. The war started, he ended up in the Confederate cavalry, in the unit of Confederate cavalry commanded by Jeb Stuart, the 1st Virginia Cavalry. That's where Stuart got started in the war. And then he started scouting for Stuart, and it turns out this was something that he was particularly good at scouting, at bringing in information. And then early in 1863, in January, he asked for permission, since he'd been scouting already for Jeb Stuart, for the Confederate cavalry chief here in Virginia, to go behind enemy lines with, you know, 9 or 10 men and bring back information that way. And that's the beginning of his career in January of 1863. So this raid, which we'll talk about in a moment, which is truly amazing, happened only 2 months into his career as a guerrilla leader, as somebody fighting behind enemy lines.
And now, how old is Mosby at this time? Do we know about
Mosby's
how
in his late 20s?
Okay,
in his mid to late 20s, so he's not very old. And there's a lot of confusion about guerrilla fighting in the Civil War. There was actually an act passed by Confederate Congress that was called the Partisan Ranger Act that authorized this kind of stuff officially. So it's not like they were fighting lawlessly. They were covered by an act of Confederate Congress. Now,
so in a sense, they were, even though they were guerrillas, they weren't necessarily mercenaries. They were sort of part of the army in a way.
They were part of the army.
Yeah.
His unit officially became the 43rd Battalion of Virginia Cavalry. Now, let me tell you the problem with the Partisan Ranger Act. What the Partisan Ranger Act did to make it attractive to Confederate cavalrymen and would-be guerrilla soldiers is that it anything that they captured from the enemy, munitions, weapons, horses, things of this nature, were then sold to the Confederate government, and all of the men who had been a part of that operation split the proceeds. So what it did was, in effect, it turned them into privateers, if you understand how naval privateers operate in a similar way. It kind of turned them into privateers on land. And so you could see, if there's profit all of a sudden involved in this kind of operation, it tends to draw a lot of unwanted people, and criminals to this kind of activity, to this kind of guerrilla activity. So there are pros and cons.
Almost like they're pirates working for the Confederate Army.
Exactly. So there are pros and cons with this Partisan Ranger Act. And this took effect all across the Confederacy. And there were, literally dozens and dozens of these partisan bands sprang up later on because of the negative publicity of people like Quantrill and others out west. Who were nothing more than criminals, really, bloodthirsty killers, criminals, the Confederate Congress repealed the Partisan Ranger Act, but allowed Mosby to stay in operation. So of all of those, he's really at the top of the list and probably the most famous, but also the best leader of this kind of band.
We're talking with historian Rick Britton. We're exploring the most significant Civil War battles that took place in Virginia. We are in the spring of 1863. Before we talk about Mosby's raid, get us up to speed now where we are in the war.
Yeah, I think that's really important to do so everybody gets a context of where we are. We're into the second year of the war. Pretty much everything north of the Rappahannock River is in federal hands. So there's been an attempt to drive to Richmond, the direct route that ended in disaster at First Manassas. Then, of course, McClellan brought the Army of the Potomac up the Virginia Peninsula and tried the eastern route against Richmond. That pretty much ended in failure. There was another attempt under Burnside, and there was a disastrous federal attack at Fredericksburg, another federal loss. But they stayed on the opposite side of the Rappahannock River. So the front line really is approximately at the Rappahannock. So if you think of everything we think of as Northern Virginia, the Northern Neck, Culpeper, Warrenton, Loudoun County up there, all of the immediate area around Washington, D.C., all of that is in federal hands. So you'll understand when we talk about Mosby.
But the valley is in Confederate hands, right?
The valley is the troops are still going back and forth, so it's being disputed.
Okay.
Winchester is in federal hands. But so you'll understand when Mosby takes fewer than 30 men into Fairfax Courthouse. You'll understand when I say that's well into the federal rear area.
Yeah, big time.
Northern Virginia. Now, he did that because he was able to do that in the middle of the night on March 9th, 1863, because he had a federal deserter, a disgruntled sergeant by the name of Ames, who guided him past the picket lines and guided him past the fortifications. In the immediate area in and around Fairfax Courthouse was a brigade of Vermont troops under a Brigadier General Stoughton. So Mosby and a couple of dozen men make it back there without anybody knowing that they're there. So now they're in the middle of this town. They start corralling prisoners. They corral the telegraph operator, who is startled to see Confederate soldiers there. They corral a number of men from the barracks, and he was very disappointed because Stoughton was not his initial target. There had been another brigadier general there, who was actually a British mercenary, who had said some very disparaging thing about Mosby and the way he operated. I think he called him, a common horse thief or something like that. And so Mosby had determined to catch this Britisher, but the Britisher wasn't there. He was on official business in Washington, D.C.
And a Britisher is what?
An Englishman.
An Englishman fighting for the Union
fighting
troops.
Fighting for the Union, right. So Mosby decides, well, if there's another general officer nearby, we'll just take him. So with just a few men, he's led over to the headquarters where Stoughton is sleeping. He sticks a pistol into the gut of the man who answers the door, who is Stoughton's adjutant, and follows this man upstairs with a lantern. And he actually gets into Stoughton's bedroom on the second floor. Supposedly there are empty champagne bottles all around, so they'd been partying that evening, and he actually pulls the bed covers back and slaps him on the rump. And Stoughton, of course, is startled, and he sits up in bed and asks, what the heck is going on? And Mosby says, "Have you heard about the raider Mosby?" And Stoughton replies, "Yes, have you got him?" And Mosby, of course, answers, "No, he's got you." And so he lies to him and tells him that Brigadier General, Confederate Brigadier General Fitz Lee has captured Fairfax Courthouse and that he better hurry up and get dressed, that he's their prisoner. And so Stoughton, you know, quickly puts on his uniform. They corral him and the other prisoners outside. They mount him on horses and make it all the way back out of federal lines and into what soon thereafter became known as Mosby's Confederacy. That whole area, Loudoun County and the other counties immediately around it, where Leesburg is and those other fairly good-sized cities up there, became known as Mosby's Confederacy. Because of all of the attacks on trains, attacks on supply lines, attacks
that was on, his base, that whole area.
Attacks on wagon.
Is that
trains?
Why when you go up 29, there's a sign for Mosby Heritage Area or something like
that's
that?
That's right. That's during the war that was known as Mosby's Confederacy. That whole area of Northern Virginia, and people have written it would be hard to determine exactly how big an effect this one man and, say, 200, 300, 400 men that operated with him in that whole area behind federal lines, how big an effect they had. But there's no doubting that they tied down literally tens of thousands of federal troops protecting the rear areas. When you think about it, it's the classic problem, and guerrilla wars haven't changed through the ages. It's the classic problem when you try to occupy enemy territory, when you try to occupy a region where the population is not that friendly. You can't just move troops to the front lines. You have to protect the important areas in the rear. You have to protect
your rail lines leading to the rail.
You have to protect your supply lines. Every time a courier goes back and forth, all of a sudden now he has to be escorted, you know, by 50, 100 men. So the courier isn't taken in all of his dispatches. Think of all the telegraph lines running down to the federal headquarters outside of Fredericksburg. All of the telegraph lines have to be protected, or all of a sudden they just go dead because of Mosby.
So what happened to Stoughton, the guy
raiders.
That he captured?
So Stoughton was eventually traded. You know, up until when Grant took over the armies here in the East and became the commander. In the East, there was a trade going on back and forth. So Stoughton was later traded.
And what happened to Mosby?
So Mosby had an amazing career through the rest of the war.
Ricky sounds like a smart guy. I mean,
he was a pretty smart guy. And some of the tactics that he used, of course, he's fighting a guerrilla war, were really brutal. But he never surrendered. He actually just disbanded his force, and they never officially surrendered. And then after the war, he made a tremendous mistake from the point of view of other Southerners. He became a supporter of President Ulysses S. Grant. He went over to the Republican Party.
Interesting.
And so then he took patronage jobs. He became the American ambassador to Hong Kong.
Sounds like an opportunist.
He took other jobs overseas. Became a fairly famous lawyer and supporter of the Republican Party.
In 1909, I know as a real sidebar we can talk about sometime, he became a national leader against football
against
in America.
Football, right.
He said, this is too dangerous a sport, and we need to outlaw this game in America.
And what the irony in that is, here's a man who saw so much brutality in his lifetime and directed so much brutality as a guerrilla leader, and to have him say that football was brutal is pretty ironic.
Next week, we'll talk about...
Next week, we're going to talk about the Battle of Chancellorsville.
Yeah. We're talking Civil War history with Rick Britton. He joins us every week. You can check him out online at rickbritton.com. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.